Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting podcast. Visit our website at oalaig.org, where you will find several speaker feeds with over 800 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed on the Light a Candle podcast are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Miriam.
It's so funny, I'm short, so it's like, I have to speak behind the podium. Okay, I'm Miriam, compulsive overeater.
Hi,
Miriam. Hi, it's good to be here. It's so strange to be a visitor. I got abstinent here in LA, and gosh, I have a long time to talk. I got abstinent, but I didn't get abstinent right away. So I always think if there's messages I can, you know, get across to others is like, just keep coming back. You never know when it's gonna hit. I hung out for 6 years before I really hit bottom. And I will say this, it's interesting because my abstinent date is November 1st, 1998. I was 175 and I'm a little short little person. I'm little, isn't that funny I can say that, but I'm short and for me, like 175 was like a size 16, and I was going up and I couldn't stop eating. And I spoke to my grand sponsor and she said, just tell your story. And so it's ironic though, because I'm staying with my aunt and uncle right now. I'm visiting. We moved to Austin 2 years ago. And she was talking to me today about my food because she's having a weight problem. And she's never had a weight problem. She's always eaten desserts. She's always eaten sweets and regular. She's always been, like I thought, a normal eater. And we sat down and talked about it. She said, I've noticed you're very disciplined with what you eat. And the whole time I'm thinking in the big book, I have a few of these. Here's one of them. I'll read something from here later. But, you know, because in the big book, it says that we're undisciplined and that God disciplines us. It's like, oh yeah, I can't do this. If I thought I could do it, I wouldn't be here. It's really a higher power that has given me this incredible life. And I was telling her what I eat, and I said, well, you know, she says, well, you know, she's telling me about how she chased the guy at the dinner party the other day. You know, he was cutting the cake last weekend at some wedding. She, you know, the guy cutting the cake, she was chasing him to make sure she got the biggest piece of cake. And I said, yeah, I can relate to that. You know, I totally can relate to that. And then I started to talk to her about how, she says, well, you're so disciplined. Like, how do you do it? And she was talking about the specifics of the foods. And I said, well, the truth is, in those moments when I want to have something like a piece of cake, or I said, I don't have dessert. I don't have sugar. She goes, I noticed that. How do you do that? And I said, well, it's not willpower. And I could tell she was kind of like intrigued. And then I said, well, what we do is we go to that higher power that for us we can connect to. And we ask that higher power to help us in those moments when we want to have that chocolate cake or whatever it is. So it seems silly in a sense or trivial. But then when we do it, it works. And then it's like, oh, okay, I'll try that again. And I could tell them. And then I said to her, and I go to meetings, and she goes, oh, well, I don't know about those meetings. And and I was like, well, actually, there's one in Beverly Hills, because she's a little bit like, oh, Beverly Hills, you know. So I said, there's a great one in Beverly Hills. There was one this morning that was great, you know. And the in-person meetings here are so fantastic. Oh, do I miss them. And so, oh, okay. You know, and we get to just be an attraction, right? And I'm just thinking how, and then she said, yeah, when you were in the disease, like when you were eating, when you were heavy, and I was hospitalized twice because of this disease, by the way, hospitalized twice. I couldn't stop eating. And I told her that. I said, it's a physiological thing that we are, it's like when I'm in the sugar, when I was in the sugar, like it's not just mental. Yes, it is. But when we're in the sugar, like my body was physiologically sugar existing in disease, like eating. And then when we put the food down, and then I told her that I got a sponsor, I asked for help, which is the truth. And my sponsor had me write down my food every day in the mornings. And she said, write down your food in the morning and call it in to me. This was when I got abstinent and I truly surrendered everything. And I said, and I would report my food to her. And then over time, and I said this to God too, when I got abstinent, I said, God, I don't care if it takes me a year, 5 years, 10 years. If I keep going the way I'm going, which is Miriam's way, I can't swear. It said not to swear on this podcast. I am, and I like to swear, by the way. I don't think there's anything wrong with it, by the way. That's just my opinion. That's nothing to do with program. But whatever God hears and is the truth, that's all that matters. That's my opinion again, but that's my experience, that's what works. So I said to God, higher power, whatever this is, program that has saved thousands, millions of people, I'm going to believe you. And if I go my way, Miriam's way, I don't stand a chance. I am on my way to death. I am on my way to a horrible existence because that's what this disease is. I really believe, and again, a lot of this is my opinion. It's my experience, strength, and hope, which is what I was told to share. And take what you want, leave the rest. Another gift of this program, by the way, is we can take what we want and we can leave the rest, you know, and thank God nobody told me I had to do anything, because Bill W., and I might be all over the place, but this is what God wants me to speak, so I'm going to say, but Bill W. knew the kind of people that we were. If we are an alcoholic with food, which is what I am, which is why the big book is really like, and my big thing is don't tell me what to do, like, because I grew up being told what to do with the food. I knew how to eat, right? I knew how. Knew meant nothing. I'd still go back to it going, what's wrong with me? Why am I doing this? Why did I do this? And my aunt said, well, didn't she used to eat through the night? Because they talk about everything. I said, yeah, I used to eat through the night. I don't do that anymore. She said, didn't she used to, like, you ate in secrecy, right? And didn't Dr. Bachrach, that doctor, like, she remembered him. Because I have experiences with doctors that told me I had to lose weight because they were all in the family. And I was the talking topic of, I was the topic of family events and my weight gain, and Miriam needs to lose weight, and why, you know, if she just lost weight, my mom used to say, if you just lost weight, you'd look pretty, you know, all these things, and turn sideways, that was another one. Oh, now you look good if you turn sideways. I mean, this was like a constant thing growing up, and I don't know where I went with that, but anyway, to fast forward, I don't go into any of that anymore, only because I've worked through it with the steps. So I lost my train of thought. Let me go backwards a little bit. I have a health condition where, I have a health condition where if I'm in the food, I'm killing myself with food right away. And I'm a heroin addict with food. And they told me at 9 years old when I got this health condition that I could no longer eat sugar. Now, granted, the medical advancements were not too much back then. But they said you can't eat sugar and you have to be put on a diet for the rest of your life. And you need to watch it. And when you tell a 9-year old that, I didn't realize, and it's really through inventory, which is one of the steps that I learned with my sponsor, writing, looking at my stuff, that I got to see that that really was a level of perfection that I felt I had to attain. A couple things there. I felt that I had to attain that was unrealistic, that I had to just kind of try to be normal like everybody else when already I felt like I wasn't, right? So I felt like the black sheep. And my cousin also has the same health condition. I have two cousins. One died of this disease. The other one is still flourishing and is a normie, I think, but whatever. And I remember thinking, you know, like I'm different. And I always felt different. And you hear that with alcoholics too. Like they just never quite felt like they fit in. And I wanted so badly to fit in. And from 9 years old to 11, my mom watched my food like a hawk. She was a teacher's aide in my elementary school. She did what any loving mother would do. And She watched everything I ate. And I, back then, thought I was fat. I wasn't, but I thought I was because my body was being talked about. Plus, puberty was kicking in. You know, I started to get things, and boys were paying attention to me a little bit. And then sixth grade comes, and she stops watching my food. So when she stopped watching my food, that's when it was like, finally, I get to eat those things that I want to eat. And that's when it was like, game on, nobody's looking. And, you know, the alcoholic, they feel different when they're kids, perhaps. And then they have their first drink when it's like 10 or 11. I've heard these because I listen to podcasts. And for me, it was when I was 10 or 11 years old, I faked having low blood sugars to go to the locker room at the YMCA. So I could go have a bag of iced cookies from the vending machine and have it be sugar. And when I ate those cookies, that was my moment of like relief. Like finally I can exist. Like finally I feel good. And from that point on, I really think I chased that feeling. And that's when in sixth grade, seventh grade, I started to eat when nobody was looking, which was at school because nobody cared. I ate Kit Kats. I ate big chocolate chip cookies. I ate brownies, like three at a time. I gained about 65 pounds in 1 year. And all of a sudden, I was like no longer fitting in my clothes. And on top of it, you know, I'm affecting my health greatly. And I really thought at that time, like, I can stop later. I can stop later. Right, I'll stop before it's too late, because they would tell me that if I kept doing what I was doing, health complications would come, right? Like loss of vision, legs getting cut off, you know, plus your organs stop working. And I was like, well, I'll fix it before it's too late. And what happened was I gained weight. I saw a picture of myself in seventh grade. And I've said this before, and there's people here who don't know me, and it's a good thing. And when I saw a picture of myself compared from fifth grade to seventh grade, I was fat, fat. And I remember like looking at my picture going, who is this monster? I felt like I was a monster. And from that point on, all I could think of was I have to lose weight. And the thing about this disease is we put so much thinking and willpower into this disease. We really do. I believe I did. You know, it was like what you think of me, what you think I need to be, how I need to look better than what I do. I need to be thinner for you. I am working towards it. Let me tell you how. I would do everything to try to prove to you that I was worth one day becoming valuable, right? And for me, it was like losing weight made me feel valuable. And Charlotte, who's 96 now, and she was hardcore, and she was, and is, she's still alive, but she doesn't have her mental faculties with her anymore. She was OANA and AA. And one of the things that my sponsor taught me to do was to talk to two people a day. She'd say, write down your food, call it in, talk to two people a day. Not texting, it didn't exist back then. You need to talk to them. And so Charlotte was home. So over time, I just kept calling her because she'd answer. And she knew Chuck C. And she would laugh at me when I call her. And I remember one time I said to her, I'm never going to live in Brentwood because I'm a teacher and teachers can't afford to live out here. And she said, you want to feel sorry for yourself? Why don't you go drive to Pacoima and compare how you're living now to that? See, that's the kind of woman she was. She would like turn my thinking around because that's what I needed. And that is like what has saved me is certain people in this program who turn my thinking around. So anyways, I would call her and I'd go to her and she would tell me things that saved my life, that saved my life. And going backwards, I would be on these diets and I would eat and I would eat. And it got to a place where every time I ate, I didn't want to eat. And I would have this thinking. And so Charlotte would say, you need to share some of the things you did while you were in your disease, while you were eating. I didn't know it was a disease, by the way. For many, many years, I thought I could do this because my family, my doctors, they would all say, you need to lose weight. I need to lose weight. I need to do this. So all I could do was feel this constant 24 hours a day, like, I need to lose weight. And I separated myself from the world. I was so angry that I had this. I used to look at pretty girls who were some of my friends. We'd go to the beach. We'd go to Topanga, take the beach bus, go back and forth. And I would wear all these clothes to cover up what I was wearing because I was heavy. And they were not. And I used to hate them, thinking, why is it that these girls can eat chips on the beach in two-piece bathing suits and not even have to think about what they're eating? And here I am having to watch every little thing I do, and I'm still fat. Like, I was just angry. I used to cry to God at night, going, why'd you give me this? Why couldn't you make me, I know it's not what I want now, but I used to say, why couldn't you make me a thin, attractive alcoholic, you know, at least, or drug addict, you know, at least they're not fat. Because to me, growing up in this town, a fat girl is no fun. And all the guys like your friends. And I'm the girl with the great personality, at least I was back then. And when I was tired of doing the diets, and to be honest with you, the more diets I did, the more it didn't work. I did a lot of commercial diets. I went to therapists. I went to dietitians. I went to nutritionists. I was hospitalized twice to try to get my food back in track so that my blood sugars would be back on track. It wasn't about my blood sugars. It was about me being a compulsive overeater, and I couldn't stop eating. But I would lose weight in that week that I was in the hospital. And so I kept living under the delusion that I can lose weight. I can do this. I can do this. I can do this. And I wanted to do it. Every single time I started a new diet, I'd say, okay, this is going to be it. And I wanted to make everybody happy. And every time I'd go on a diet after about a week, I'd be perfect that first week. Then I'd get weighed and lose like 5 or 6 pounds. And then that second week, I'd start having what I wanted here and there. And then it got to a point where after about 3 or 4 months on these diets, I'd maintain like 170. But as soon as I was off of a diet, I'd be up. So it was like on to the next diet. And if there's anything I could stress, it's like you never know when it's going to hit, but you got to be willing to be open and to put it out there that you need help. And my mom tried to 12-step me when I was 16. And her friend, who was an OA and GA, who lives out here actually on 4th Street, in a great apartment. I'd go to him. I went to him once, and he was abstinent a long time. And he was talking about higher power. And at 16, I was so messed up, so cloudy from this disease. And, you know, he would talk about God and higher power, and I just couldn't understand it. And then I continued to eat. Then at 18, my mom caught me binging on bread at like 11 o'clock at night. And she said, why don't you go to OA? And that was a moment when I was willing to listen. And I always say this too. It's like, you never know when you're going to have those windows, those moments of clarity where you realize this isn't right, you know? And she said to go to OA. And I went to the Darby office in Reseda the next day. This is when I was 18. And they talked about, I saw the steps, and back in Reseda, each step was in a frame, and they could have been Japanese characters. Like, it made no sense to me to admit that you're powerless over food. Like, what? I don't get that. But what kept me coming back was the fact that people spoke from the heart. People talked about doing things with food that they had never done before. Finally, the truth is being said about what I do. And when I came to that room, there was an overwhelming feeling of love. Like all the running, the trying, the chasing. Because we're not stupid, you know. We have very strong willpower. But all of that stops here. And people noticed me. They didn't judge me. They didn't look at me like I was wrong. And everything in me said, this is it. But I had to be in a place where I was willing to hear it. In a state. For those first 6 years, I really did the best I could. I did 3 binges a day. And I had no structure in my eating before that. I used to look at a piece of cake and go, okay, I'm going to time myself. From 6 o'clock to 6:15, I'm not going to eat that cake to see if I didn't eat it. And if I, you know, made those 15 minutes, then I would say, okay, see, I can control it. Like, those were the games I played, you know, that was just one. And I can give you some real horror stories of the kind of eating I did and the health I was doing to me and the way I existed. I don't need to go into that in too much detail, but let me tell you, it sucked huge. And I could talk to you another time about it if you want to know more about what I used to do to really abuse myself. I was never bulimic or anorexic. Tried to be, couldn't do it. I just ate. but anyway, and then I hung out for 6 years. And it's funny because I'm just, you know, doing my experience, strength, and hope. And they say half measures availed us nothing. Truth is, for me, half measures availed me something. It did. Because I did steps 1 and 12 those first 6 years. I knew I had a problem, and I talked about this program to everybody, but I hadn't really worked the steps. and I did the 3 binges, and that was good enough for me, you know. What happened was my outside world got a little better. I got a job at a recording studio in West Hollywood. I started to hang out with some really cool people. I thought I was cool. But I would still embellish. I would lie. I would make up stuff to make myself look good. So I wasn't really working it like I started to finally work it. But it was fun, right? Doing the half measures thing. And I even went to a good school. I mean, all those things. They taught me in program, if you want to go to school, you know, fill out an application. If you want to go to school... If you want to go to school, you know, do these things. It really was program people that taught me how to do everything. Like, I didn't know how to write an essay well to get into a university. And I did. So what brought me to my true bottom of surrender was this. By hanging out in the rooms, and again, I would stress to not leave if you are one of us, if you are a compulsive overeater with food. Because by hanging out in the rooms, I knew about that step 4, but I never did it. And I knew about it. And those first 6 years were pretty good. Then what happened was I picked a bad guy. And he was not in any kind of program. And it was an arrangement. And he was a songwriter at the studio that I used to work at the time. And anyone who liked me, who showed any kind of attention towards me, I was like, you like me? Let's keep this going, you know, because I was that damaged. He really devastated me. And here's the gift. By hanging out in this program, I knew that I had created this. I knew that my thinking was the problem. I knew that my thinking only knew sick. Because my thinking is disease. And so they taught me in program that sick attracts sick. They taught me in program that my picker was broke. And that I only know how to choose people who will hurt me and abuse me. And I knew in my heart that I picked this guy. That I allowed him in. And he liked my funness. He liked my personality. I was 170 and maintaining that with 3 binges a day. I really thought it was the best I can do. I was hanging out with famous people. I thought I was something else in my mind, all my mind telling me diseased crap. And when I hit that bottom with this guy, and for me, you know, there's something connected about abstinence and love and sex. And for me, I had to really kind of get right with myself and with this program. And that's when I truly, because I knew, Miriam, you're still effed up. Miriam, you don't know how to allow any goodness into your life. And that was my moment of like, I have no resources in me to choose anything good for me. Like, I don't know how to do it. I don't know. I'm just going to go back to that heartache, which will lead me to eating and I don't want to live this way anymore. And that was my bottom. And I knew that my thinking was diseased. And I knew that I needed help. I didn't want to be me anymore. And I guess one of the gifts about this program, too, is when we truly hit a bottom, when we realize the food isn't going to work anymore, and I can't keep going this way. And I don't know what life's going to be like if I stop eating. I don't know what life's going to be like if I know what life's going to be like if I keep eating, and that's all I know. So what happened was I surrendered everything, and I went to Monday Night Miracles, and I said, I need help. And I meant it with all my heart to the universe, to higher power, to God, to whatever it is you call it, that I don't want to be me anymore. And I knew that if I kept going my way, I'd eat and I would eventually die pretty fast. And I'd only choose misery and heartache. Because for me, disease is not just about the food. It's about everything. It's everything. It's our perception. And our perception affects the choices. And our perception affects the thinking. And our perception affects the manifestation. So it's like I had to, this is my opinion, by the way, but that's my experience. So I surrendered at Monday Night Miracles and I said, I need help. And this woman spoke at me and everything in me said, ask her to be your sponsor. And I was willing to do anything. And she taught me things that, you know, she was not about making me feel good. She was about telling me what I need to know to get better. And my experience has been feeling the pain, feeling discomfort, feeling uncomfortable is good because that means we're abstinent. It means we're doing it differently than what we're comfortable with. I was comfortable with disease and misery. I was comfortable with eating. So if I'm going to put the food down, it's like an alcoholic detoxing. You know, for that first year, it's funny, I was just talking to somebody the other day. For that first year, and here's the thing too, it's like if you got 30 days or you got, you know, 20, whatever it is, 60 days, 62 days, I was a raw nerve. I was a drug addict coming off of drugs. I put the food down, I got my single apartment, and I made this program my life. And I went to meetings every day. In fact, she would say to me, my sponsor said to me, I think she said, go to a meeting a day or go to 6 or 7 meetings a week or something like that. And I was like, I doubled that. I'd go to, funny, Friday night, there used to be an in-person meeting. I think it was in Glendale. And I drive to Glendale. When you put the food down and you're single, by the way, you got a lot of free time on your hands. So Friday night, I would drive to Glendale. I'd go to this in-person meeting. There used to be, it was at the Glendale Adventist Church or hospital. Did you ever go to that, Pearl? Yeah. And there used to be like 200, 300 people there. OA, big Friday night meeting. And it got smaller and smaller, but I'd still go. And then Saturday morning, I'd go to the Burbank meeting. I'd exercise before that with my sponsor. Then 10 o'clock, I would drive over to the Spiritual Maintainers. Then I'd go home and have lunch, absent lunch. Then at 2:30, I'd go to the Studio City meeting. Then I would go home, and then I'd get ready to go to the Malibu AA meeting, which I loved. If it's still going on, highly encourage you to go there because it's a huge meeting, and there's always like famous people there, which I like sitting next to famous people and be like, oh my God, I'm in the same group as this person. You know, it was really fun for me. And they had two really powerful speakers. And I will say this too, and it's in here, which is why I want to read from the big book, which by the way, when I started to read the big book and I replaced the word alcoholic with compulsive eater, which by the way, compulsive overeater is still a light way to describe what this is, in my opinion. It's addiction. It's addiction to food. And for the first time, when I read this, by the way, I read this at 18, slow learner, encouraging all of you who don't get this, keep coming back, because finally, I got the fact that, like, I'm hopeless, I'm screwed, but when I read this for the first time, I didn't feel hopeless anymore. Like, I felt like, this is what I am. I'm an addict with, like, this is what I am. I'm this. And I'd go to this AA meeting on Saturday night, and they'd have, like, heroin addicts who, like, you know, had these horrible lives, you know, when they were in the disease. They were pregnant, didn't even know they were pregnant while they were using, and then they had their daughter. And then, like, all of a sudden, they become, like, they get sober, and they, become a New York Times bestseller. Like, I need, as a true, one of the speakers was that, actually. And I needed that. Like, I needed the hope that there's this power that if we tap into it, it can help me, you know? And then Saturday night, there used to be Radford on Ventura, and I'd go to this 11 o'clock AA meeting, and I'd sit with crazy people who were sober, and I loved it. And then I'd wake up Sunday morning, go to 7:30 Studio City, and I wouldn't eat, you know? So I was like, enough for me. And I'd go to the 7:30 Studio City. Then I would have breakfast. Then I would drive over to Serenity Sunday in Beverly Hills, Roxbury. I'd drive all over the place. And then I would go to the beach, and I'd go running or walking on the beach, talking to God. Oh, no. And then I would go to Malibu, go to Coogie's, have lunch there, abstinent lunch, talk to the waiters or whatever, have fun. And then I would go to the beach and go run and walk or whatever. Then I'd go home. And then I would go to the Sherman Oaks meeting at 5 o'clock. And then I'd come home, and then I'd like be student teaching or subbing or something, because I didn't want to be in the music business anymore. Once I quit using, I said I need to be self-supporting. Learned that here, by the way. I learned everything here. Everything. To make a long story short, By doing this program, by saving my life, because there were just things that I believe in my heart, and it's been my experience. You can't save your face and save your ass at the same time. Can't swear. You can't. You got to speak the truth. You got to tell it like it is in order to recover. And that's what I did. I fought for my life. I fight for my life still to this day, 24 years later. Why? Because I really believe in my heart that if I admit I'm weak, which I learned here, by the way, through the literature, through my sponsor, through women in the program who have walked before me, that I'm weak, that I need help. Once the food is down, I need help to do life. I don't know how to do this stuff in abstinence. I still don't. I just paid for my daughter and her friends to go to Magic Mountain on the phone. So the three of them right now are having a great time in Magic Mountain because I need to be a present parent. I don't know how to do this. How do I do this, God? Okay, be present. Do it. Just do it. Act as if, right? So everything. I'm a mother. I'm married to a normie. I'm married. Jesus. I wasn't girlfriend material. Believe me. I'm healthy. Like, I like dressing pretty, you know? I could walk around without a sweater if I want to, but I'm not because it's cold. But, you know, this is where I put on makeup. I do my hair. When I was in my disease, I didn't do any of that. See, this is recovery for me, is to take the action. But this is a story. My sponsor had me read this a while back, but it's a great story, and I encourage anyone to read it. Keys of the Kingdom in the big book. And there are just, and if there's anything I could share too, it's like if you're struggling, just read the big book for now. Ask God for help or this higher power and see how you can relate to the big book in a way where you're an addict. You know, it's like, okay, how do I relate to this? And this is one of the things that made sense to me. And I studied this big book because I just wanted to know why I was the way I was. So this is on page 273, The Keys of the Kingdom. It says, I stayed up all night reading that book. For me, it was a wonderful experience. It explained so much I had not understood about myself. See, I didn't know why I ate. I didn't know why I had this. I didn't know what my problem was until finally someone said, Miriam, you're selfish, you're self-centered. Read the big book, pages 62 through 69, and I'll see you at a meeting. And he hung up on me. But you know what? It got me to see, oh, I'm selfish. I am. See, I didn't know. I didn't know. And then it says, and best of all, it promised recovery. It doesn't say maybe for some, but not for you. It promises it. If I would do a few simple things, simple but not easy, by the way, and be willing to have the desire to drink removed, here was hope. Maybe I could find my way out of this agonizing existence. It's agonizing when we're in the food. It's hell on earth when we're eating. So you're telling me there's a way out? Okay, perhaps I could find freedom and peace and be able once again to call my soul my own. This disease took everything from me. everything, I'd be dead. Without, that's what I said to my aunt. We were talking about this because my cousin Karen died of this disease. She was bulimic and she died at age 40. PhD, by the way, she had. Came from, you know, a comfortable life. Had all the privileges that one could, you know, think would help someone to have a good life. She was bulimic. She didn't care. She stopped caring. This disease takes that from us. You know, she died at age 40. And then I'm going to share this too, because of the things my sponsor taught me, and because I know that if I go out, I'm screwed. I still believe that with all my heart. I work this program because I think it's a wonderful gift if we are willing to surrender, take suggestion, not direction, even though Bill called it direction because he knew the kind of people we were. And my big thing was, don't tell me what to do unless I ask you. I still get that way sometimes. That's all right. And by doing these things, and it's really not like, oh, I got to get a year. I got to get 30 days. I got to get 40 days. You know what it is? It's 1 hour at a time, few hours at a time, 1 day at a time. 1 day at a time will be the next day. If I do what I'm supposed to do today, and sometimes it's like that, then the next day is better. If I did what I did yesterday, if that makes any sense. I didn't look at it like I got to get this. I just was like, I just have to just do this today. But I knew that if I kept doing this 1 day at a time thing, I stood a chance of surviving. I really believe in my heart that if I don't work this program, and I know it, even to this day, having moved to Austin, the self is so dangerous. My ego is so dangerous. And I didn't realize that. My ego was working against me when I moved. It was telling me that nobody cares. It was telling me that, you know, this little thing, that little thing, it means the end is coming in my mind. It would tell me that this person doesn't do that. This person, it would tell me all kinds of things that were lies. And that's the resurgence of the ego. And in AA Comes of Age, it talks about that. I'm an alcoholic. So if I'm putting the food down, I'm not cured. Some people say recovered, good for them. If I know that for me, if I say I'm recovered, that will tell me I'm better, I'm fine, maybe I don't need this. I'm recovering. Absolutely I'm recovering. I have an incredible life, 1 day at a time. But boy, if I'm not doing this, and I need the repetition, the how it works, I mean, I can say it by heart, of course, a lot of us can, but it's because we need that repetition. I need to still call people who laugh at me when I'm like, oh my God, I'm not going to make it. It's too much. The emotions, the pain, I can't take it. But you know what? Knowing that there's an end, that I get to feel it means I'm healthy. If I'm feeling it, don't feel healthy. My head still tells me I'm crazy. You know, Miriam, you're too emotional. Miriam, you're this. Miriam, you're that. And that's why I need program, because I'm never done. Never done. I spoke to my husband. He starts talking about the bills on the phone. Didn't want to talk about the bills on the phone as I was talking to him coming over to this meeting. So I said to him, honey, I love you. I don't want to talk about the bills. Can we talk about the bills when we get home? This is reality stuff. Not fun for me. But that's okay. You know, Miriam still needs to grow up sometimes. But this is also the keys of the kingdom. By doing what my sponsor said, I'll go back to that. She said, you know, write down your food, call it in. I still write down my food. I still call it in. I give it to my sponsor. And I don't have sugar. I don't have bread. I don't have alcohol. I do it because it feels good not to have it. I recoil from a hot flame, those foods. Have no desire to have it because I know the bad feelings it will create in me if I have it. I know that I will feel off. Disease will begin. And it's at bay 1 day at a time. And she told me to do a bunch of other things, which I still do. I do more, actually, in different ways. But that was 1 day. And now I want to. But then I went through periods where I didn't want to. Anyways, I just keep doing this 1 day at a time. But at the end of The Keys to the Kingdom, this is me. This is what this program has given me. Did I even want this? No. I just wanted to put the food down. I just didn't want to be in hell anymore. There is an answer. There is a solution. But But the end of the Keys of the Kingdom, it says, the last 15 years of my life have been rich and meaningful. I have had my share of problems, heartaches, yes, disappointments, yes, because that is life. But also I have known a great deal of joy and peace, that is the handmaiden of an inner freedom. I have a wealth of friends. Can I just tell you, during this whole move, when I really, there were days when I felt like I wasn't going to make it. I wasn't even believing what I was doing. I was writing, I was reading, I was praying, I was calling, going to meetings, and I still didn't get any relief from my feelings and my pain emotionally and the grief of moving and leaving my OA community here. Really a strong fellowship, and I haven't left it. That's another thing I'm realizing. Like, I haven't left it. It just felt like I did. And there were people, there are women, some men too, who are here who have heard it all. And it's unexplainable. So anyways, real quick, for these AA friends and unusual quality of fellowship, for to these people I am truly related, first through mutual pain and despair, and later through mutual objectives and newfound faith and hope. And as the years go by, working together, sharing our experiences with one another, and also sharing a mutual trust, understanding, and love, without strings, without obligation, we acquire relationships that are unique and priceless. There is no more aloneness with that awful ache. And there's more to it, but there's a sense of belonging. I never felt like I belonged. Just keep coming back, and it works if you work it. Thanks. Mm-hmm.